listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 158 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, your host for the show. And today we're going to do something a little different. I think I said that last episode as well. But this is a totally different style of recording the podcast. This episode you're going to hear was actually recorded live in front of an audience at the DIY Musician Conference that happened a couple months back. We recorded this episode there, and it was an awesome time of hanging out with actual listeners, being able to see people who listen to the podcast face to face, and then have some time to interact at the end. And this episode, we're calling the Top 5 Album Release Mistakes. And like I said, we actually had some time at the end to take questions from the audience. I know you're going to want to hear those. So a little tip, listen all the way through to the end. You'll get a kick out of it. So we've got that for you today. And speaking of feedback, I want to remind you that we have our listener line at 360-524-2209. We've been getting calls, and we're trying to get them in future episodes of the podcast. So feel free to call, leave us some feedback, ask us a question, let us know what you liked, what you didn't like, tell us a story, whatever you want. You can do that there. Just try to keep them brief and to the point. It helps us get it on the podcast. You can also email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. I'm also pretty accessible on Twitter. If you want to say hi or ask a question, I have it open pretty much all day while I'm at work. My handle on Twitter is @KBruner, the letter K and my last name, B-R-E-U-N-E-R. You can also hit up Chris Robley, who's our blog editor and joins me on the podcast, and he's in this episode as well. You can reach him at Chris Robley. Pretty straightforward. Before we get to the rest of the show, it's coming up on the new year. People are making resolutions. Hopefully you're making some goals for your music career. And while you've got some downtime over the holidays, take some time and do something about your web presence. If you don't have your own artist or band URL, if you don't have your own artist or band website, take care of that now. When club bookers and press go looking for you online, they want to see a professional website. It says that you are somebody that's serious about your music. You can get a great artist website designed and built by people who are artists themselves at hostbaby.com. And not only will you get a great website that has some amazing new features, they've been rolling out some new stuff lately that is really cool, especially these new video pages. You got to check it out. Not only will you get that, but you get free distribution through CD Baby. You can try it free for 30 days and start the year with a professional website, your own band URL, your own artist URL, and take 2016 to the next level. Again, hostbaby.com, check it out. With that being said, let's get to our podcast recorded live at the DIY Musician Conference 2015. This is the Top 5 Album Release Mistakes. Hello there. This is Top 5 Mistakes When Planning a Release, a special DIY Musician Podcast recording. And it wouldn't be a real episode of the podcast unless we had some music. So Paul, Paul up there has some theme music for us. Paul, can you hit that right now?
You're listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
Oh yeah.
DIY
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
All right. Well, thank you guys for coming out. Is everyone in the room familiar with our podcast that we do? Heard it before? We got some fans out there. I don't know if any of the haters showed up. We
have them.
We have a couple. If you're not familiar with the podcast, Chris and I have been doing a podcast for CD Baby called the DIY Musician Podcast. I think we have a logo slide. Mike, there it is. That we've been doing since, I think, all the way back to 2007. And we've been doing it for years. And so we thought it'd be fun. You know, it's been a long day, lots of information, to keep it a little light, a little fun, a little interactive. And
I tried to hire a clown through Gig Salad to just kind of sit in the back and be weird. And
true story. But, we also looked for a sword swallower, but they were busy.
They were busy.
But so if we want to keep this interactive, those of you sitting way in the back, I encourage you to come up front, and we're going to have plenty of time for Q&A and talk. But we're going to be talking about the five top mistakes that artists make when releasing an album. But it wouldn't be a podcast episode without a little banter. And Chris, we can't go any further without talking about your jacket. It's... Just so you know, he felt like this earlier this morning what he was wearing was a little bit too...
I didn't feel like... Okay, so I wore this yesterday. I wore this outfit yesterday, and I felt fine. A lot of people were enjoying the jacket. And I got up this morning, put a different outfit on, which I also felt fine about. And someone, I don't know if you're here, said... what was it? Yesterday you looked like an artist. Today you look like part of the establishment. So... I had to go upstairs and change
clothes immediately.
Yeah.
But you're looking good.
Thanks. Yeah. And then Chris Bolton, who used to be on our podcast with us, saw a picture, and he was really curious about the plaid with what are these? They're tiny skulls. They're actually not
him of all dots, people should be commenting on your wardrobe.
I know.
So we're going to talk about the five top mistakes artists make. We're gonna have fun with it, and we're gonna have lots of time for Q&A because we want to get you guys involved. And you know, I've been in multiple bands. I think I've done like 7 or 8 official releases where I was a part of the release. I've played on a bunch of other records. And how many releases have you done?
I've done 7 of my own, and then lots of other bands I've played in.
Yeah, and so when we were going over these top mistakes, it's stuff we hear artists at CD Baby call in and talk to us and like, I've got this issue and with my release, and a lot of times it falls in one of these five categories. But I would say that this episode of the podcast, it's really more of a confessional, because I've made all these mistakes multiple times and continue to
do so. We keep making them. Yeah.
So it's something that I know that we can all relate to. We can all learn from each other's mistakes, but
Or not, apparently, learn.
Or not learn from them. But that's part of being an artist.
Yeah.
Should we get into it?
Yeah.
All right.
Actually, before we do, I just have like a 30-second thing I want to say, which you've probably heard at every panel already. When Kevin and Tracy and Tony started talking about the idea of having a conference, I was a huge skeptic. I said, there's not enough time. Do it in 2016. We're never going to get this together, and I'm so happy and thankful to have been proven wrong. And very quickly, I saw that there were so many great sponsors and quantity and quality of speakers, and then all of the CD Baby community being enthusiastic. So that's my moment of self-congratulation and gratitude. So thank you all so much for being here.
And yeah, yeah. And you guys have been great. We go to a lot of conferences for CD Baby, and everyone's been saying when we opened the gates and the artists came in, what a positive, excited atmosphere it's been. And I've been loving it. I've been in here working. There's a lot of panels I wish I could have gone to. I mean, what are we missing right now?
Are we missing? Well, hopefully we'll see it all in video.
Yes, we will. But let's dive into the top artist mistakes. So releasing an album. These aren't in any particular order, but this has to be one of the top ones, one that I know I've made repeatedly, and I think it's the easiest one to fall into, and it's booking the album release show before you've had a finished product in hand. How many people have done that? Raise your hand. How'd that turn out for you? I hear stress down here on the front row. Yeah, every time, it always seems to happen that, you're about 5 months out from releasing your album, and then the perfect show gets booked, and you're thinking, in 5 months, this thing will be finished.
It'll be
no
fun.
Problem. We'll be sitting on it for a while, and this will be the perfect show to call our release show. And, Chris, what always happens?
Delays of various and many kinds, like... manufacturing problems, or you just decide that you hate your album and you need to remix it, or you can't get a good photo, or whatever. Anything could go wrong. So
And inevitably, what happens is you're scrambling to get those CDs shipped the day of the release show, and all press, all buzz, all everything leading up to the show is pretty much wasted.
Yeah.
Because you already called it your release show, so you can't do a redo on your release show.
So I can top this mistake, and I'm making it right now. I am about to put out a new record in January. The release date is January 15th, and I have not just a CD release show, but a CD release week. I have 7 shows in a row at a residency, and it's going to be the release week, and I don't have my discs.
You're really taking it up a notch with that one.
Yeah, so I hope they're done.
You'll do fine, I'm sure. I mean, you'll be fine. So that's one we hear artists talking about all the time. It's like, they book the release show, and then they're scrambling to try and get it up on iTunes, get it on Spotify, get it all the places it needs to be the day before the show happens. And it really is advantageous for you as an artist to just stop, take a breath, and then kind of bring the creative process to an end, and then start thinking about the album release cycle. And I know it's tough as an artist because you really... really want to get that music out there. You've been in it. You're really excited about it. You want to get it out to the world. But it's really the point where you just kind of need to stop and let things happen. Not waste a good opportunity, because an album release is still one of the greatest ways to get press to cover you, to get featured on websites.
And it's rare. It's probably not going to happen again for a year, 2, 3 years. Before you have this opportunity again, so
yeah, and when you know, I don't know if anyone made it down to Dimitri's publicity talk earlier today, but it's, you know, the press really likes to have something around a release. They want a story around that, and if the release has already happened or you don't give them enough time, that's just gonna kill all those opportunities. And the album release show is not going to be all it can be, because you want to finish the album, then focus on promoting a show. And trying to juggle all those things at the same time just usually ends up on, substandard results for all of them.
Well, and we might be skipping into other mistakes here, but also when you're rushing like that and your CDs are arriving the week of your release party, and that's also missed opportunities in terms of sending it to radio, DJs that still want physical CDs, missing out on anything that relies on the physical product, which still is some, radio promoters and some, bloggers, media folk.
Chris, that was a fantastic segue, because number 2 on my list was not allowing for an adequate press window leading up to the release. And I know that may sound similar to the album release show, but in order to start getting press and getting people interested in your album release, so you don't necessarily have to have final product in hand, but you do need to have enough solidified in order to for them to understand what you're doing. And that's going to take time. And when we've talked about it, it's really looking at it like, if all you're looking at is to get press in, you know, the local weeklies that every city has that has concert announcements and music features, you know, you probably need about a month of window in order to make adequate contact, get them the stuff, and give them an opportunity to write about your music. If you want the local paper or something that's bigger media, you're probably going to need at least 2 months. And if you're talking radio and national press about a release, it's always best to even...
Like 3 to 6.
They need time. They need time for people to listen to your music. They need time for people to write about the music, and you gotta allow for that window of time. So, like I said, your album doesn't have to be totally finished for that to happen, but the closer you are to the end, the better.
More and more that stuff can be done without the finished product in hand, as long as your music is mastered and you've got the files, you can upload it to, you know, a private SoundCloud thing, or however you're gonna share it with a publicist or whoever you're working with to try and get all of this machinery around your release in place. As long as you've got the finished music files and a finished album cover, just JPEG or, you know, high quality image, you can start working on that stuff. But yeah, it's good to gauge your preparation time based on kind of the scope of your ambition for this release. So,
and Chris actually called me out in a recent blog post on the DIY Musician blog for being guilty of this one on the last release my band did. Last year we had last year we released an album. It was a Christmas album, so you know you can't release a Christmas album in January. That doesn't really work. So we were behind schedule, and we hired a radio promoter, and we just didn't give him enough time to work the single. He had like 4 weeks to work the single, the radio, and then the Christmas window last year was like the shortest it can possibly be with the way Thanksgiving fell and Christmas fell. It was like 4 exact weeks, and so there was a really limited time to break through on radio, really limited time for the guy to pitch to radio, and so we really didn't. We got a few spins, but not what we could have done with the song that we felt really strongly about, just because we didn't give it enough time. And
I don't know if this makes it better or worse, but you did get some good results. It was a great song, enough that the impression I get is that had you just given him an extra month or two, the song could have been huge.
Possibly, yeah. We had high hopes for the song. It's the first song we'd ever written where people were actually physically crying and bawling in the audience, and I've never done that before, at least not with playing a song. At least
it's about
in a good way, I guess.
It's about Grandpa not making it.
No,
Christmas, right?
That sounds really awful, Chris.
That's what it's about, I think.
It's a Christmas song. It's about getting home for Christmas, and it's got all these little, you know, things that pull the heartstrings along the way. And no, they're getting home to see Grandpa on that one verse. Not that Grandpa didn't make it home.
Oh, I thought they were. Maybe I'm bringing my own thing. I thought they were trying to get home to see him, maybe because he was on his way out. But
he's just not a fan of our music, apparently. The song's called Christmas Time Again by Small Town Poets, if you're interested in hearing what the lyrics really say. so we had this song we felt really strongly about when we were playing it and for people, and you know, doing some shows, doing some tours last year leading up to release. It was having that effect on people, so we were so excited about getting it on radio, and the promoter just didn't have the time to really work the single like it should. So that's something that, as well, if you think you've got a radio song, you really want to kind of pause things and someone who's a good radio promoter is going to need a solid window in order to get you traction, especially if you're spending money. If you've only got a couple weeks and you're hiring a publicist and you're hiring a radio promoter and it's like 2 weeks before the album comes out and you're trying to make everything happen, you're probably wasting that money, and you should put it towards something else, because even if they're telling you they're going to get you stuff, unless they're the greatest publicist or radio promoter on the planet, they're still probably not going to be able to help you out all that much.
I don't know if this is stepping on any of the other points either, but that sort of three-month window is good to keep in mind for almost all aspects of promoting the record. The radio guy's going to need that much time. Your publicist will need that much time if you have a publicist. If you don't, you're going to need that to do the research of who to write. And, you probably, by the time you get to the launch, you're going to want to have a video that you can tease to a blog to do a premiere or an exclusive, something like that. And that's going to take a lot of time to produce, and that's got to be done in advance of your release, so there's lots of stuff turning at once.
Yeah, the next mistake I have on my list here is not building a story around new releases, waiting to promote the album until it's available to buy or stream. The when you should start promoting your new release is when you start writing and recording your new release. It's a story. The album is just sort of the climax of the story, and if you're not building that story along the way, you're missing a lot of connection points with fans and drawing them in. And we get asked all the time, there's so many bands out there, how do I get traction, how do I get the attention of folks when there's so many artists out there? Well, if all you're telling them is buy my music, you're probably not going to connect. But if you're talking about the writing process, why you're writing these songs, the topics you're writing about, getting a glimpse into the studio, and the whole thing. It's a story that leads up to the climax of the album release. That really is an opportunity to draw people in. So when the album actually comes out, when you say buy my CD or download my album, go stream my music, it's a no-brainer. They're anticipating.
Yeah, they've been waiting for
it. They've been waiting for a long time.
I wonder if we should talk about that idea of story and what it means, like, and how you find the story. Because I think for a lot of people, it's like, here's my new record. I'm so excited. It's going to be out. Like, and they're so excited, they assume that's important. But for most people, like, who cares? Like, another 300 albums just came out today. So there really has to be some extra thing that's about the human interest story, not about the music. And so that there's something that draws them into the music.
Yeah, I don't know if Benji from Pledge Music was speaking earlier today. I'm not sure if he was talking about it, but he really talks about this a lot with doing Pledge Music campaigns, which both of us, our last albums we did, we both successfully funded our albums through using Pledge Music as a campaign, fan funding, option for getting the album done. And one thing that he talks a lot about, Benji, Pledge Music, was, you know, you're using this to tell a story, and they have a lot of really useful tools that help you build anticipation, build the story. But to your point about how to tell a story, I think it's something artists struggle with. I mean, even when people are writing their own bio, they don't even know what to write. It's like, what should I say? I don't know how to write about myself, because it is weird when you're writing about yourself. There's another podcast. I know we got a lot of podcast fans in the room. There's a podcast I'd recommend called Song Exploder. It's pretty new. We got a fan down here. Matt's a fan. Oh, well. They talk about a specific song. A lot of it is, you know, they talk about the process of writing and recording. But some of it is, there's a lot of episodes where the person's talking about how this song came out of an event that happened in their life. And in one particular episode, I forget the guy's name.
John Roderick.
Yeah. What's his band?
Long Winters.
The Long Winters. Really moving description of why he wrote the song, how it had this connection to his childhood, and how it had a connection to current events. And it was a very emotional song, and then even took it through the recording process, and how the way they recorded it was different. And at the end, you know, they play the song, and, you know, I'm driving down the road just like bawling, because it's such an emotional story. And I'm like, this is exactly, every artist should listen to this episode, because we always get questions about how to tell your story. And a lot of people get hung up in the fact that they have to, like, go, well, when I was born in this place. And they tell their every event that happened in their life. But really, it's a matter of, like, what's special about you that can connect people to your music? And why is the music that you're creating now, that's going to be released sometime in the future, important to you, interesting to them, and what's happening in your life that brings that all together? And I think that's the story you should be telling leading up to the release. And to not tell that story, I think, is a mistake.
Yeah, I always tell people to, like, think about your favorite artist and, you know, come up with 20 or 30 questions you'd want to ask them, and then just ask them of yourself, and type or talk into a phone or however you get your ideas out, and just blab and blab and blab. And it could be about the process of your music, about the story behind the song. It could be why you think your music is important or unique, or why you're compelled to make music. Any of it, just go and go and go. And then have someone you trust who maybe has an angle, an eye for marketing or publicity, read it, and they'll probably be able to pull out the best things, and then turn that into a, you know, 3-paragraph thing, and that's your story. So,
and as you're telling that story, if that's how you're approaching the release of your album, by the time you're engaging a publicist or the press, you're going to have so much goodness for them to latch on to pitch to the press. Because the press doesn't care about the fact that you have a new album. They want to know the angle. What's interesting about this album? I've noticed a trend with my local paper that every time I see them feature a local artist, and, you know, sometimes they're just gigantic half-page features, rarely does it have to do with just, hey, this artist that happens to live here has a new album. It'll be like, this guy that spends, you know, 40 hours a week teaching, he actually has this whole other life, and he's pretty successful as an artist. And it's this really cool thing about this guy that's teaching your kids in your neighborhood is this rising star in the indie community. And that's interesting to them. They want to tell that story. And so if you've developed a story, you'll have so much more of that ready for the press.
And I think Dimitri might have mentioned this in his panel about publicity, but if you can, once you get your story in, on your own or working with a publicist, if you can get the headline of that story to be kind of undeniable, like the person doesn't care about your music, they just see that headline and they think, I could probably just reprint this in the paper and people would be interested, then you're off to a great start. So think of the headline, like what's your soundbite?
The next mistake I had is that we talked about was, wow, something exciting going on over there. not fully recognizing all the costs and time that are needed to finish your album, and that includes mastering and duplication. I talk to so many artists that when they get, they're like, I've got X amount of money to spend, and I spent it all, and all I got was through the mixing engineer. And I haven't mastered it. I haven't gotten CDs made. I haven't even thought about paying for a publicist. I haven't thought about
design,
paying for artwork, any of that. And it's I've seen that happen so many times where an artist is in a good album creation process, and then it just all falls flat. Can we get someone to grab that door over there, and you can just close the door. They don't have to be quiet, because if the doors are closed, they won't be bothering us.
And then what happens at that point, you got all this momentum going, and then you get stopped up financially. It stopped. Like,
aren't you guilty of this one? Is this
No. My thing's one? Not from budgeting. It's neuroses.
Bigger issues altogether.
Yeah. No, I always get to the end and I start having doubts, and then I make another record. And then I put that one out, and then I have to go back to the one I abandoned, and I realize, oh, I like it again. And then I put that one out. It's a different thing.
Especially artwork. Do not go cheap on the artwork, okay? The sad truth, I don't know if it's sad, because I love album art. Album art's one of my favorite things about music. That's the first way anyone's going to experience your music is with their eyes, because they're going to look at your artwork and decide whether or not they ever want to push play. And you may like that, you may not. I've talked to a lot of artists where they absolutely hate that idea that no, it should be about the music. I'm like, it is about the music, but I have to look at something in order to know that it's your music. And is it something that says, yeah, I should listen to this. This is cool. I understand, you know, visually, that it's probably going to be this type of music that I'm really into. And it takes some money to get good artwork. And so many people have had great albums where they've spent all their money and time on the music, and then they just throw something on top of it and get frustrated because it's not connecting with folks. And I've, you know, seen their artwork. I'm like, wow, that's that papyrus font. I might not want to. I might not listen to that. It doesn't connect with what I think is going to be good. But, you know, even now there's some great apps that make making some great-looking artwork pretty simple. So, I mean, that's something you got to take time and plan for. And getting a designer, there's some great resources online to get a, you know, I think 99 Designs is one of them. And there's a couple other websites where for like $100 you can get a whole bunch of people, like, submitting artwork, and you choose the one that you want, and you pay them. It's there's a whole lot of sites like that that are popping up that make it real easy to get some good stuff. So it's something that you got to save some money for and not skimp on.
For a few years before I was doing marketing for CD Baby, I was one of the CD Baby music editors, and amongst that team, we would listen to everything that came in, and we got about 300 albums a day. So. But before we heard anything, we'd pull it up on our computers and we would see the album art. And it really, really sometimes surprised me how good the music was when there was an atrocious cover. And we were, you know, pretty good-natured about it, because we want to make sure if it's good music, it would get its time. So, you know, if it was an editor's pick, which we used to do, we'd usually still feature it. But I think a lot of publicists, they have a certain credibility or coolness that they want to, not publicists, I'm talking about like journalists or bloggers. And if your album art is atrocious, they're not going to want to get behind this. Yeah, even if they like the music, they probably won't even get to listening to the music.
And I think this with artwork is probably one of the places where I actually use family and friends more as a sounding board. Sometimes with music, I take some of those opinions as a grain of salt. My mom's going to love everything I do. I'm like, Mom, this song's terrible. No, it's amazing. So sometimes with my music, I seek outside counsel with kind of balancing, getting a sounding board. But for artwork, I think, you know, it's that's something that I think people, you show them, say, is this good? Does this represent who I am? And I think you can get some pretty good opinions and be able to make adjustments in order to get it right. But not just artwork, there's, you know, mastering is another one that if you've got to get your albums mastered, don't skip that process because you run out of cash. Wait until you have the money to do it, because if you don't have your album mastered, you're not going to get played on radio, just period. They're not going to play unmastered tracks. It's going to be, the levels are going to be off. It's not going to be EQ'd as well as it should be. And so don't skip that process. I think if you were going to skimp, I'd rather you skimp on artwork than not get it mastered. You got to have it mastered. And so those are the things that a lot of times artists come to us going, they're ready to release, and they just got their tracks from the mixing engineer, and they have nothing else. I'm like, well, you still got some work to do. You still got some money that you need to put into this to make things happen. So
just remind me of something about artwork. Is the good thing I feel like about art is that minimal is always fine. Like, if you don't have a designer, you don't have a great idea, like, think about the White Album. Like, just put, like, a flat color and find a good font for your band name. Like, I don't know, maybe that still takes some skill, but I feel like it can be really simple and doesn't have to cost a lot and take a lot of time.
There's actually a... I know over in the workshop area, which is in the Plaza Room, some of the CD Baby crew are doing a session on that. I'm not sure if it already happened today. It might be tomorrow, but I would, if you're interested in some simple apps and things, they were going to show some apps on how to create artwork. Let me see when that is. Oh, it's right now.
Oh.
So if you want to get all up right and leave and make your way down there, feel free. You won't hurt my feelings. The last one I have on my list, and then we'll open up to questions. And
we want to hear all mistakes, too.
Yeah, we like talking about mistakes on the podcast because we've all made them. We just all need a group hug. We're all going to make mistakes. And the last one we had, which is, when we were talking about this, it was something that I kind of had noticed as an issue that I think a lot of people don't even think about, is that I've seen so many artists, and in fact, my friend that I play in his band made this mistake, and I think that's why I realized this is kind of a common problem, is they stop promoting the album after the album release show. And it sounds silly to say that, but the more I start thinking about it, I see that all the time. Bands put this big thrust on the album release show. It's this big release. As far as just like mental energy, you've been working on you've been recording, you've been writing, you've been recording, you've been thinking about marketing it, you've been planning an album release show, all these details, which, you know, most artists, myself included, don't like dealing with. You know, we just want to play music and we want to make good albums. And all these details, like, when's this email going to go out, and when's this show going to happen, and who's going to be there, who's going to open, all that stuff. You're kind of like, it's done. I just need to walk away. And I've seen that happen a lot.
Well, I think it's two things. It's exhaustion from the big push, and you're tired, and then you do this thing. But also can be, disappointment or something. Like, maybe what you were expecting to happen from your release didn't happen in that first week. Maybe your CD release party wasn't well attended, or none of the local press wrote about your album, or who knows. You had expectations, and they weren't met. So you internalize that, and you get bummed out, and then you kind of give up, and you start thinking about the next project, because that's the one that's going to be really exciting and vindicate you. When really, like, maybe you just takes more time to tell the story of your album. So, like, I like when friends of mine have released a new video every month for the next year after the album comes out, because every single month you're reminded of, oh, yeah, this album still feels new. There's still something happening to continue its story, I guess. So,
yeah, I think I like what you said, that you kind of internalize. And I think that's in my friend's case, I think that kind of was what was going on, that he was putting a lot on the line to release the album. I think as artists, a lot of times we feel that way. We're putting a lot on the line. We're putting ourselves out there in ways that, you know, people that don't pursue creative passions may not experience. We've done something we're proud of, and we're saying, here it is, what do you think of it? And it may be that, I didn't really sell many albums on my album release show. Not really many people came out. It must not be worth promoting. It's terrible. Let's just move on. But in reality, it's, you know, I think with all of your music, you've got to tell the story for the long haul. You got to be in it for the long haul. And sometimes, you know, I've seen artists where they've had an album out for a year, and then something clicks and it starts connecting with people, or they something happens and suddenly that it's traction starts happening, people are coming out, and it's just like night and day. Like, what did we do differently? And it's like, sometimes it's not all going to happen in one show.
Yeah, I feel like Perrin Lam, an artist, has been getting talked about a lot today, but he's an artist on CD Baby that got written about in the New York Times and this week, and that, he's an example of that. I think you might have already actually mentioned him in another panel, but he put an album out, it didn't do much for him, and a year or two later, someone at Spotify put one of his songs on a playlist, and it got listened to, 20 million times or something?
Yeah.
Many times, and it blew up way after the fact, so.
Yeah, so I think, you know, when you're planning a release, I think as an artist, even, so you make it to your release show, it's okay to have a pause, but it's time to start thinking about, how do I keep telling the story of this record? What are some things that, is it YouTube videos? Is it a tour? Is it some other ways I can get my music into the hands of folks? And you know, just because the album release has happened doesn't mean that there's no more chance for press. That's just something that press has an easy time, hanging their hat on, understanding what's going on. They're like, this is an event. This is a one-time thing. This is something newsworthy. But that doesn't mean there's no other opportunities for press. I think it's just a matter of, how do I keep getting this album in front of people? And that, yeah, so what if the first month it didn't connect, sales weren't what I thought? If you believe in it, you got to go out and sell it. No one's going to believe in your music more than you. And you got to express that passion about what you're doing in a way that makes other people want to get on board. And if it doesn't happen in the first week or the second week, you got to keep it going. And that's just something I've noticed artists doing a lot more and more. And when I experienced it with my friend, I was like, we did that album release show, and then all the momentum he had around this new album just died. And sure, it wasn't as slam dunk as he had hoped, but there's still lots of people that would love his music. He's an amazing songwriter and has an amazing voice. And it's just that one night didn't make the career, and you got to keep going. So yeah.
You mentioned touring, which I think is, well, for me, I should say, has been a great way of keeping the story of the album alive. For three different album releases, I would go on, you know, decent length tours, like 3 weeks or so, immediately following the release. And the first time I did my own publicity, and the next two times I had a publicist helping me. But for all of those tours, in every single town I went to, there was a story in the local press, because I think, like, in your own town, they're not going to write about you all the time, so the release is the event. But when you're traveling to a new place, that is an event for that community, because you're, you know, exotic and from somewhere else. So, I think touring, if you can swing it after an album release, is a really great way of continuing to get press. And then all of the press you're getting in those towns, you feed back to your local community through Facebook or whatever, and that re-energizes your fan base that just saw you at the release party. And so, yeah. So tour.
Yeah. Okay. Good advice.
Yeah,
you got good advice. We have lots of time for questions. Is Ron in the room?
Yep.
Oh, Ron is here. Oh, and he's already got the mic. Look at that.
Do we have a prize for the most embarrassing confession?
Yeah. Before the first question.
What? Okay.
Oh, we've got prizes. So what we'll do is we'll do a community vote. If someone shares their biggest mistake, we'll all vote on which one was the biggest mistake. Rally around them with a prize, give them a hug, and
then tweet it to their embarrassment.
No. But before we get to the question, Chris, I was going to say, if you've been listening to the podcast for a long time, you know that we go periods of doing a lot of episodes. We go through breaks,
fallow
times, and it's because, you know, it's kind of our, we've got day jobs at CD Baby that isn't just doing the podcast, but this panel felt kind of like a classic episode of the podcast where, you know, I'll talk to Chris early on in the week and we're gonna, like, we're recording Friday and like, all right, Friday it is. I'll block out time and I'll tell Chris, oh, well, I'll put together notes. We'll have notes ready to go for the podcast. And
Thursday afternoon
comes, like, Chris, I'm going to have those for you today. Those will be there for you today. We did have notes for this ahead of time, but right before coming up here, I realized I lost my notes. And so usually the podcast ends up where I'm scrambling last minute to write notes and do whatever. So Matt down here on the front, who's been a longtime listener, and also you actually played a gig with
Matt.
Yeah,
we played a gig
in Chicago the other night. So he caught me out in the lobby frantically trying to get the slide for the screen together and type up my notes. And yeah, this is just like any other episode. So this is how it goes down. If you're wondering how we make the podcast, that's how we do it. We just kind of
cobbled together.
Wing and a prayer. But if you have any questions about the podcast, any of past episodes, we're happy to talk about that as well. If you just want to ask a question about, you know, CD Baby or share a mistake story, we're happy to hear that as well. So the mic ended up somewhere. Okay.
I'm Ken Voorhees from California.
Oh, thanks.
And
for making the trip.
Just a comment about publicity in general. Not everybody receives the information at the same time. So you think you have a big release date and a big release party, but people pay attention to other things while you're having your release party, I suppose. So as it trickles out, as you keep that promotion going, it seems like that would be a real valuable thing to keep going. But I did have a question about you can maybe get away with a bland CD cover, you know, that's stylish but very simple. Can you get away with a simple video?
Video?
Video. I would say absolutely. I think the beauty of YouTube is that it's not Hollywood, and that's what people love about it. I went to VidCon this summer, which is a video conference in LA. And it's all about video, and all these YouTube stars are there. It was mind-blowing, the kind of people that have massive followings on YouTube. And, you know, you look at the videos you see go viral or connect with people, there's tons of videos that it's just someone sitting on their bed. Their bed's not even made up. And they're sitting on their bed playing a song, and it has a million views. And so clearly production value and making your bed does not matter for a YouTube video. So I would say no. You want to have the audio quality decent, but don't get hung up on production values when it comes to video if what the content you're creating is has the ability to connect with people. If you're singing a heartfelt song and the audio is decent, it doesn't matter if it's an amazing production or crystal clear video. It's that ability to connect with people. So that's what I would say.
I agree.
Oh. Hi, I'm... Oh, sorry, so loud. I'm T. Lynn Chase. I'm also from California, from
wow.
San Francisco. Yeah.
Both of you, thanks for making the trip from California.
It's been an awesome, totally worth it, wonderful experience.
We appreciate that.
I make most of my money as an artist and producer doing commercial music, doing uploads of packages for libraries that then end up in advertising or, you know, if I'm super, super lucky, in television. And only recently has one of the bands that I've started to blow up a little bit, and now I have to think about this ecosystem. So it's been really great to learn about it. But I'm sitting here all weekend going, I have literally 1,000... elements of which I have multiple mixes, because that's what you do in the commercial world, is you have a music bed and then you have a vocals version and then you have the version with and without guitars and 60 seconds, 15 seconds, 30 seconds. I've got all my music is in packages, and I can't put an individual thumbprint on each one. I don't want to treat them as separate elements the way that this ecosystem would seem to require. So I'm just trying to figure out, should I use CD Baby kind of like a library, like I do with my library channels? I'm just trying to figure out, okay, with the band, I'll definitely go with this mm-hmm. ecosystem of players. But what about all this other music that I've got and monetize elsewhere?
She could create a single album with lots of tracks, right? And
yeah, I mean, my suggestion would be if it's music that you want available out there for usage other than just the, you know, maybe the sync placement you're getting. You know, if it's just a very stripped down music bed, for those of you that may not be familiar with what tends to happen in commercial music and for TV and film, what she's talking about is that a lot of times, like if you're a band and you got your regular album mix, it's always good to have a version without the vocal or maybe a version that's toned down for different usages or even stripped out some of the instruments so it's really mellow, but it's all basically the same song in essence. But my suggestion would be if there's some that are more complete, that I would put together maybe an album of like and name it, something like, I don't know, what's a good name that for like library music, production music, or putting together an album that makes it known
library
that
music.
it's like production music, but not calling it production music, like music to use in your video. That's a good one. I'm going to do that. music, so something like that where if it's, I would make it available because things, if you have it out there and you're wanting to get those tracks used by other people, that's, you know, that's how it's going to happen. So I would do it.
Especially for sync and YouTube monetization, it seems like having that stuff out there would be great.
Yeah. Unless there's, for some reason, restrictions on those tracks, like you've written something for a commercial and they say, you know, this is an exclusive usage. But other than that, I would put all my music out there. Oh, we got Mike right there.
Hi, I'm Seth Kent from Denver, Colorado. Quickly, my embarrassing mistake before release of an
awesome.
Album...
Awesome, I can't wait.
...is that I quit my job before I released the album, and not only that, we hadn't started recording yet. So I'm in the middle of that
you
mistake right now.
You had serious faith in what you were doing.
I don't know if I'd call it faith.
You just really needed a lot of time to focus on your record.
That's... Well, it was half by choice, and it's a longer story, but it's definitely like, you know, we're in it now. As you know, we're coming out here, and my wife and I looked at each other, and we're like, we're sort of hip deep. We can't get out of this. We gotta finish this project. But you were talking about the Christmas album, which relates to an idea that we had with this album we're working on, and so I want to ask. And you had this song on that Christmas album that you guys felt really strongly about.
Mm-hmm.
Did you consider mixing and mastering that earlier in order to have that ready for a release?
We did. We just weren't done at all. But would have been a good idea to knock that one out, get it mastered, and dang it, why didn't we think of that?
But, where were you a year ago?
I know. Come on.
I was quitting my job.
Yeah, so no, that would have been the one thing that they probably still would have wanted is a lot of the way digital or radio works now is they use digital delivery services, and those always have album artwork and the track. So we probably could have engaged the radio promoter to get to, you know, try and get them interested, but with those digital delivery services, I don't think they'll let you put anything without the final artwork, which we wouldn't have had at that point. Back in the day, like I remember when that band Small Town Poets, we were signed to a major label, they would actually, you know, it was in the mid to late 90s, radio stations were used to receiving CDs without art that just said what the single is and when it was dropping and to start playing it. But now that we're in a digital space, it's kind of weird that now that we're digital and you could strip out the art, that they're wanting the art. So it's kind of weird. But yes, that would have been a good idea to wrap that up, just that song, and focus it on getting that song done and released.
Hi, my name is Sharon Moore, and I'm outside of Mobile, Alabama. Enjoy your podcast all the time. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I'm working on my third original CD, than did some earlier, but my question is about the publicists. Do you suggest using a publicist in your own local market or getting somebody from a larger market who has more, you know, knowledge about the thing? And what should you expect from them and what should they expect from you? And how do you go about finding somebody who's reputable and isn't going to charge you more than the CD cost to make?
Chris, you
thank you.
Work with
okay,
several.
Yeah, so I think about finding one, you should talk to anyone you know that's had good press and see how they did it, and maybe some of them will have worked with publicists, and particularly if they're in similar genres to you, then just ask for recommendations. If that doesn't work, just do some Google searches, and usually if they have a good website, they'll have like testimonials, and just start a conversation with them, especially particularly if you've already worked on your story and you kind of have an idea what the pitch is going to be for the record. That makes them feel like they don't actually have to do much work up front. So that would be that point. What to expect? Was that the next part of it? Do your homework, write your story up front, and then obviously once you have a relationship with a publicist, you'll further craft that. They're going to want you to be immediately available for any opportunity they get for you. If it's an interview, like, write them back within, you know, a day at, don't wait any longer than that, but try and be as responsive as you can so they can hook it up. What else? You're going to probably have to pack a bunch of CDs because a lot of publicists don't want to do the stuffing of the CDs and mailing themselves. So they'll send you their list and then you have a party and get a pizza and have your friends and family help you do that. And it could be, you know, 300 or 400 CDs if you're doing a national thing.
I think with one thing I would advise you on is see who the artists in your local market are that seem to get press, whether it's a good show write-up or a feature article. All those are things that typically somebody's pitched them on, and ask who they're using. I think the publicist you used on one of your releases, he charged like $500 for a local album release press blitz.
He had tiers, so he'd have like the cheapest one was you're just going to do local for the release party, and then he'd have regional for the release party, or a national campaign, which would be about 3 months, and then he had his sort of highest tier was for the life of the album, so he'd keep trying to get more coverage for you until you put out your next record, which he was probably hoping would be another year instead of 5 years. But that's another thing to look into, what your ambitions are for it, what you can afford. If you're going to tour, then the national thing makes sense. If not, then maybe it makes more sense to have it be regionally focused with a few, like, dream pitches, you know, like you want to get covered by NPR or something. So have them chase a limited amount of those national things.
But the last thing I'd say on that, as far as what you should expect, as far as press, you really have to be prepared to expect that nothing happens. Even if you pay somebody that's a great publicist, sometimes it's really hard to get coverage. Sometimes it just is, you catch somebody at the right time and it just happens real easy. But so you got to plan that's money that, you know, chances are you'll get something, but it's just money that it's kind of hit and miss what you get.
I just had one more thing, which I think is important. And it might be tough to get a sense if you don't really know the person that's going to be the publicist, but you really want them to like your music and believe in it, because there are some that will, you know, they'll do the job, they'll get you some press, but if they love the music, they're really going to do everything and pull out all the stops and contact everyone. So if you can get a sense for how they actually truthfully feel about your music, that's important.
Yes, sir.
Thanks. My name is Tim. I'm from Chicago. And I was wondering what your thoughts are on either in addition to or in place of a live show for a release, having a party where you actually listen to the album. Would that be weird?
No.
People do that. My only frustration with those is I think I've been to one where there were so many people talking, you couldn't hear the music. So it wasn't a listening party. I think the first time I went to a listening party, I was a bit naive. I think it was while I was in college, and I thought I was going to get to actually sit down and listen to the album, and I was pretty excited about some. Is everybody okay? Nothing? We don't need to evacuate, do we? And so that was my only frustration, was like, oh, I thought we were going to go, like, it was at a studio. I thought we were going to actually put the music on and kind of listen. And so it can be. It just depends on what you're trying to do with it.
My friend Rob is a producer and a studio owner, and what he does for the albums that he really is proud of that he worked on, he'll have this thing called a needle drop party, you know, you invite your fans or your really, you know, loyal listeners, and they come to the studio. He has, like, drinks and some food, and then you do a very short, like, stripped-down kind of show. It could even just be two songs or something, where you're talking to the audience, and you say some stories that prepare them for the music, the album, and then after you've done your show, the album starts playing, and it is more of like a mingling thing, but people have the opportunity to kind of listen for what they are prompted to listen for when you're doing your performance part of it. And those are super fun. And
yeah, that sounds great. I'd love to go to that.
Yeah, it's at APOL.
Oh.
And then most of those people walk out with a CD, you know, assuming you've got them by that point. But and a lot of those people will also do an album release party, so it's not usually in lieu of, but if you didn't want to do a big show, I think that's a great idea.
We only got a couple minutes left because we got a tight deadline on this room. We got one over here. Yes.
Well, I'll try to make it quick. My name's Dan Smith. I'm from Williamsburg, Missouri. Tell by the way I talk. mine's kind of a question, more of a second opinion. I've talked to legal. I'm all about not getting sued. I want to keep everything I got in my life. In 1993, I did a project, recorded the songs, and the guy that I work with made all the money, all of it. So I'm very educated. So anybody that deals with me is with a contract, receipts, you will get a full 50% or whatever you're supposed to get. I'm a real particular about receipts. Well, we fast forward to 2015. I want to put, and I had a mediator take care of it for me because I don't speak to this person much. I'm like, he doesn't really play nice. And we forgive and move on. But what I'm saying is, the music's done. I've had it remastered. I want to put it on CD Baby. All the songs are copywritten. He wrote them. He did the whole deal. I just sang it. I didn't play guitar or nothing, but two. So I agreed to, in the contract, copyright those two songs. Well, my bean counter person that takes care of that, I'm not good with red tape at all. I hired somebody to do that for me. She cannot find where the rest of the songs are copywritten. We're okay with copyrighting the other two songs, no problem. What my question to you is, we put it out there, and we're going to call it Vintage Timber River Band. That's what the name of the band I had in 93, just to throw it out there. It's kind of got an older sounding recording, but it's good. I just don't want nobody coming after Dan Smith. That's probably a tough question. Legally,
What was the last thing? Can you just put it under your own name? Is that what you said?
No. Well, I'm going to put it out there with Timber River Band, Dan G. Smith, in my basic store of songs that I have on CD Baby.
Is it the same recording from... You're releasing an old recording.
All the songs are recorded and done, been remastered.
And who paid for the original recording?
I did.
Yeah.
So kind of you have the rights as a label, the publishing.
You can, with us, you know, when you release music with us, you're representing that you have the rights to do so. So whether or not you do is probably unique to your situation, but as far as we're concerned, yeah, you can upload it as long as you write, you know, who wrote the songs and give us all that information.
And you would owe that person, they're publishing their mechanical royalties for the CDs you sell in America through
us. Yeah.
Well, the deal I had to make with this clown was I give him full 50% minus whatever it's a contract minus my cost for that, because it's a waste. I felt like I needed to throw them out there. So if I get the other two, there's two songs that are just in La La Land. They haven't been copywritten or nothing since 93. Yeah. I've been singing and playing. They've been on the radio. They've been in commercials. And they've just been out there. And nobody's copywritten those two songs. Yeah. They're actually the best two songs on the whole album. So I'm going to copyright those two songs for him. I don't want somebody else's song. I just want to throw it out there and maybe make a dollar is all I want to do.
Yeah.
But I really don't want nobody suing me.
No, I mean, the thing is, if you put it out there, going from, hey, your track's on iTunes and it made a little bit of cash to being sued, I think is a bit extreme. I think usually people would be like, hey, let's remove this and talk about it. But that's kind of a unique situation. I would say on the podcast a lot, I'm not a lawyer.
And, I talked to an attorney, and he said that he's a songwriter. It's his problem. And I'm worth being sued, by the way, sir. People will sue you for a hot cup of coffee. Yeah. So I've been sued for $1 million and divorced 3 times, and I'm not going to be sued, I promise you.
Then I just wouldn't do it.
I don't know
that I have an answer for you today. I mean, I know that, like I said, we let you represent your music, that you own the rights. So
if he's listed as a songwriter, it's his problem, right?
I would have to know a little bit more about this exact situation. So
there's nothing more to know, sir. I mean, he wrote them. He says they're his. And I was just a singer. I was just hired.
My assumption is that if you're the label, you can sell the record, but you have to make sure you pay him his mechanical royalties from those sales.
To him.
So as long as you're doing that, I think
my contract would cover that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if anybody says anything, it's his problem, not mine. So I was second opinion. So you're a little wobbly. What do you think? I want to do it. I think the songs may sell. Just like I've learned, you know, something may sell 5 years from now that was recorded 10, 20 years ago.
I would say you probably won't have any issue, but I don't know this person, so I don't want to say, hey, sign up for CD Baby and everything's going to be fine. So I don't have a perfect answer for you.
You don't have the answer I want, that's for sure.
Well,
so.
No,
well,
because,
thanks.
Because I don't know that person, so I can't really represent.
I do.
But, yeah.
I do.
We got to wrap up real quickly before we go. If you're not a fan of listening to the podcast, check it out. It's cdbabypodcast.com. It's in the iTunes podcast library. You can subscribe. It's free. We have closing in on 160 episodes where we've interviewed just all sorts of artists and people to help you move your career forward. So check that out. Some of the recent episodes have been some of my favorites. We've had some good ones lately.
Yeah. And I think we have a mystery prize. I have no idea what it is, but I probably should go. Well,
yeah, the gentleman in the hat here. We got to go. We got to wrap. Unfortunately, we've got the showcase in this room tonight, 8 o'clock to midnight. You should be here. They're all amazing artists. But we got to clear this room in order to allow them to sound check and set up. So Chris and I will be over in the Gold Room. If you want to chat more, I'd love to talk to you. And
love
thanks
to hear
for coming
your,
out.
Your embarrassing story over there.